Not very many congregations really see childcare as with the importance that it has or with the kind of possibility and opportunity that it offers within the community, both for serving the childcare, serving families who need childcare, serving the childcare providers, as well as being a ministry for them in a different kind of. So, do you want to introduce ourselves? Why don't we just say our names and maybe. Why don't we just say our names and if we have any experience with family child care or what our particular concern vis-a-vis child care is. Go ahead.
I'm Sue Roberts from Reno, Nevada, and I teach child development.
It's a vocational program, and so I'm training people to work in child care.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
My name is Linda, and I'm from the Oregon coast, and I do family daycare right now in my home.
And I'm Rick Brown, and many years ago, I worked in a cooperative daycare center, parent co-op daycare center. I actually was in I grew up in a
really?
Co-op.
That's great.
That my mom started, and. And I have a daughter now who's in a daycare center.
Uh-huh. And I'm Tracy from Oakland, California. I'm just interested in, I have a degree in maternal child health and I'm interested in mothers and children.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's great. Okay.
I'm Grant Austin from Denver, Colorado. And our church is just beginning to study the whole issue as to what kind of ministry we might carry out in this area.
I'm Ruth Dow, and I'm from San Francisco, well, Alameda, California, but San Francisco area. And I'm a Lutheran school teacher, and I've been involved in two schools. Well, I helped set up a preschool program in one school, a preschool based care program in one school. And I've been in another school that has a preschool program. They're debating what to do with daycare. But in the school that I helped set up, that they've since closed that program.
Hmm.
So I see some of the issues that maybe you can address. The reason it's closed is basically financial.
Mm-hmm.
And the church couldn't afford to continue to support it. And the director left, and it's hard to get a director who's committed to it, too. So there are issues there to deal with.
Which relates to salary, no doubt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we're back to the cost of care.
Right.
Yeah. From my own sort of curiosity and also just so that we can think about not only what we as individuals can do and what our own congregations can do, but at a more national level, if you wouldn't mind telling me what religious community you're affiliated with.
Lutheran.
Yeah.
Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
Jewish.
Presbyterian.
Oh, really?
United Methodist.
Oh, really? You see, I assume that most of the folks are Lutheran. It's just not true. Good. Okay. Okay, good. Why don't I start? I always like to start with a biblical passage. And the one I chose today is actually from the New Testament. And I chose this because I think it's a very familiar passage, but I think it highlights the importance of children, and that when we're working within churches, it's important to go back to the theological basis for supporting the work, because it isn't always appreciated as fully as I think it can be and should be. This is from Mark 10, 13 to 16. People were bringing little children to him in order that he might touch them. And the disciples spoke sternly to them. But when Jesus saw this, he was indignant and said to them, "Let the little children come to me. Do not stop them. For it is to such as these that the kingdom of God belongs. Truly I tell you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God as a little child will never enter it." And he took them up in his arms, laid his hands on them, and blessed them. It's a model for us of reminding our congregations how important children are in the ministry to children that exists. Why don't we start by talking a little bit about the importance of family child care, what the statistics are. And so we talked about a little about this yesterday and earlier in the week, but just to remind ourselves. In the United States, there are approximately 10.2 million children in daycare. 6 million of them are in childcare at any one time, during any one day. And over 2 million of them are under the age of 3, which means that we have a large amount of infant and toddler care, and that number is increasing. The need for infant and toddler care is among the most pressing in this country today. So that's something that a congregation would probably want to think about, although it's more costly and in other ways a little more complicated perhaps, but it's newer, but it's probably what the pressing need is, or maybe one of the pressing needs.
A statistic that I heard is that in 1989, the year our daughter was born, she's now 2, more children are born than any year, even during the baby boom.
Really? Mm. Really? I knew it was a lot. I hadn't
like
heard that.
Something like 4 million were born in 1989.
Staggering, isn't it?
It was just all of a sudden this.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I mean, along that line, it really means that congregations, synagogues and churches, I have to keep saying
synagogues and churches. Don't worry, you just say it the way you
say it. No, but it's true. I mean, and we need to, I mean, all of us need to remember that when we're talking about the religious community, we're not just talking about churches. That there's this tremendous need for more care, and that the care is going to be in a variety of settings, but we need to think very carefully about supporting family child care providers for that reason, and also supporting infant and toddler care for that reason. The alternatives are not necessarily as good, and I'm thinking particularly of the for-profit chains. And the for-profit chains are hard, I mean, people can argue with me about this, but it's tough to make a profit and still provide quality care at a price that people can afford. Mm-hmm. So that there's a reason.
I didn't understand what you're saying. The centers that are running for profit.
Yeah, like the kinder care chains,
yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, it's very tough to make a profit and provide child care that is quality care that people can afford, and still have a low turnover rate of your staff. And the turnover rates in for-profit chains are incredibly high, which is something that congregations have to be aware of when they're thinking of starting a center. If the word gets out that they're thinking of starting a center, it's not unheard of that one of the for-profit chains will come to you and say, we will run your program for you if we can rent space. Mm-hmm. And that's often the kind of option that a congregation might want to consider because they don't feel like they have the wherewithal to manage a program themselves. You just have to be very careful of what you're getting into when you decide to do that. Because it is a ministry housed in that church, and people will come to that congregation. People will come to that program believing in the church or synagogue and assuming quality. And if that quality is not there, the church or synagogue really needs to take responsibility for it. So it's just something that people need to be aware of. 51% as of 1987, 51% of mothers with infants were employed, and that number is going up, which speaks to the tremendous need for infant and toddler care. In a survey that was done, and I don't know where it was done, I don't remember, 85% of the infants in out-of-home care were in family child care. So we're talking about our youngest children and the importance of family child care. The cost of care averages $4,000 to $11,000 a year for full-time care, and the high end of that is for the infant and toddler care because the staff-student ratio is higher, mm-hmm. so that it has to be, the cost of the care has to be higher as well. So when you're talking about young families with young children, you're usually talking about families who don't have a lot of resources themselves and are going to be looking for the highest quality program that is the most affordable. Because family child care programs don't always have as much overhead, and many of the women usually who are running the programs, it's usually women who are running the programs, if that person owns her home, or the family owns their home, then the cost doesn't necessarily have to be as high as in a center. So when a church or synagogue is supporting family child care, you probably will also be supporting those families in your community who don't have as much income or flexibility in finding quality programs. So that I think it's a very important ministry because you may be serving a population that is having the toughest time finding quality care. Let me just run out a few other stats that we didn't have a chance to talk about yesterday, which I think is useful in understanding the dimensions of what we're talking about. Between 1970 and 1988, the percentage of mothers with children under 18 who were in the workforce went from 40% to 65%. Let's see, it's estimated that, and currently there are 10.2 million children under the age of 6 in child care, 16.1 million children between the ages of 6 and 13, which is the after-school and before and after-school care. this is another thing that's real important to consider in terms of family child care, because family child care providers often have additional flexibility in terms of their hours, so that they may well be serving those children who need the before and after-school care that the centers don't have the flexibility to offer. And the statistics are now, the established statistics are that there's at least 2 million children who are taking care of them between the ages of 6 and 13, who are taking care of themselves every day. The informal statistics is that it's probably closer to 6 million, which is really terrifying. And the research has shown that what we call self-care, children taking care of themselves, leads to increased fearfulness, increased loneliness, heightened vulnerability to peer pressure, and a greater likelihood of substance abuse. So when we're talking about serving those children, we're not only talking about serving those children now, but possibly preventing problems down the line.
It's probably a lot of accidents, injuries too.
That's right, yeah. In 1995, the estimate is that two-thirds of the preschoolers there will be 14.6 million children as opposed to the current 10.2 million children in the preschool programs. So that jump is in 7 years, from 10.2 to 14.6. And the estimate is that there will be 34.4 million children, or three-quarters of all the children between the ages of 6 and 13, who will have mothers employed in the workforce, which just means that the need for child care is increasing at a dramatic rate, and therefore the need for family child care and other forms of child care is also increasing dramatically. In terms of wages, we talked about why people need care. Between 1973 and 1987, and I mentioned this before, I mentioned this on Monday, but I think it bears repeating, the median wages of hourly workers dropped by 29% for men younger than 25, and for 19% for men between 25 and older, which means that in the last two decades, in the last decade and a half, the earning power of families has eroded considerably, which underscores the need for care that people can afford.
The earning power of individuals has been eroded. Families may have increased their earning power by having a second person in the workforce.
Right, right.
That's what you're saying.
Right, right.
They need to.
Right, that, right. Which speaks to why there are two-parent families with both parents working. But there's still a lot of two-parent families who aren't making it either. What did we see on Monday, if I can remember? That 38% of the children in poverty live in two-parent families. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. But let's look specifically at family child care. And I want to do some thinking together. First, I want to talk about what are the benefits of family child care. We've talked about a bunch now, but there's probably others. And if we get them up, then we'll have a clearer sense of what it all is.
And you're defining family child care as only as care not provided in a for-profit setting, or just in a family
care in
home?
Care in a home. Right, in somebody's home.
Right. It's, do you want to describe it, Linda?
Well, what I do is I have a small group of children that come every day to my home. I wouldn't say I really make money, but it's not a for-profit center, and I have very minimum in the state of Oregon, virtually not regulation.
Yeah. Family childcare is typically 5 children or fewer.
Okay.
In a home, taken care of by a person in their home. In some cases, in New York State, for example, there's such a thing as group care, small group care, which is care in a home of up to 10 or 12 children with a second adult working with them. But the problem with family child care is that it's not regulated in many states adequately. So you have the kind of crisis, horrible situations where there was a situation in Texas where they discovered 54 children being taken care of by one adult, 13 of whom were infants strapped in car seats. And this kind of stuff goes on, which speaks to the need for regulation and speaks to the need for synagogues and congregations and churches to become involved in advocacy as well as direct service to make sure that that kind of thing doesn't go on.
Yeah.
And you know, the people that put their children in that center are not doing it because they don't love their children. It's probably because they couldn't afford anything else that was the best thing available, and they were stressed, and they were between a rock and a hard place.
So it's either don't work and my child doesn't eat, or put them in this terrible daycare and at least have food for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to make choices.
Yeah. Okay, but thanks for clarifying that, because I meant to do that at the beginning of the year. Okay. Right. I want to talk first about the benefits of family child care, why this particular form of child care, as opposed to a center-based or having a relative in your or a babysitter, why this particular form of child care is desirable. And then I want to talk secondly about what the problems are with family child care, not the problems with child care, with the family child care system, but the problem that family child care providers face. So what are some of the things that we've said?
I think a family atmosphere, a home atmosphere.
Which is something which I think is probably one of the major things that parents of young children are looking for.
Small numbers. Oh. Not 54, but when I go with one of them, a small number.
And it generally is. I mean, you have your higher situations. But.
Well, I know a lot of my family's paid to know that I'm there, and I know their child, I know the family. Very consistent. Uh-huh. And the same children will be there. They become a daytime family of their own. So that is very, very important for very young children. Mm-hmm.
The turnover rate in centers, if I can remind you, is 41% a year.
Of children?
41% annually. No, of staff.
Right.
So that consistency is very important, particularly with the youngest children. Right? Sometimes there a proximity to home can be an important one, just being in the neighborhood.
Or close to where the parents work, either. Uh-huh.
Don't always have that flexibility when you're looking at a center.
And another is the flexibility of hours, that you can run extended hours either way, and you know, feed them dinner, where centers generally are not going to be able to help you out on that.
Mm-hmm. Thing.
If your car breaks down or you're in a late meeting, it's usually those kinds of things can be worked out in a center. If you have to pick your kid up at 6, that's exactly what they mean. They don't mean 6:15. Or 6:30.
Where you pay a dollar a minute for 2 minutes.
And it's real sad because it could be something, you could be in a traffic jam where you live.
When I sign my contract for Elizabeth and Daniel, I have to put down the name of the person that they can contact if we're more than 10 minutes late.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That would come in as soon.
That could come and pick the children. Yeah. Right. Anna, do you take sick children? What do you do with sick children?
Oh, well, my parents, fortunately, are really good about that, and they don't bring them sick. And I occasionally have had one or two. Herb and Mom is there, you know, just, but again, a real small community. The families all have some extended kinds of family or neighbor type things. No, that's that sick child thing.
Sorry. One of the things that is a possibility in family child care is sometimes providers specialize. They offer, they'll work with a network of centers and make themselves available for children who are just mildly ill. I mean, children who shouldn't be in a center, but children who don't necessarily need to be at home with a parent. So the specialty
And certainly a church could look at, if they, you know, wanted to, could look at that as really servicing a need or backing up family daycare providers by offering a place where the runny-nosed, you know, marginal child could go.
Yeah. Another.
But that's expensive. There's just that. I know some hospitals run those. I mean, they have the on-site center, and they've also, you know, real obvious they're able to do that. Mm-hmm. But it's expensive.
Mm-hmm. The lower cost sometimes. That's not always true, but sometimes the lower cost is important.
Well, I think the thing with family day, at least where I am, I charge on user fee. Not on contract, even though some days I've had as little as two children there. So obviously if I'm working for $3 an hour, I'm not making anything. But in the end, it washes out. Clearly, if these children were in Sanders, they would pay, I assume, at the beginning of the month, and you contract where your children are.
Do you all understand what the distinction
Linda's making? We're paying for a month of child care that we didn't use.
You've got to hold seats. See, I don't hold seats. I just figured my families will be back. But if they're gone on vacation, I don't charge them. But Sanders can't do that. Well, yeah, because they have payroll.
We have a huge waiting list.
You can't afford to run the risk of not buying that.
Do some family child care providers work on a contract basis?
Yeah, in our area, a few are trying to start doing that, but we're still so rural. But I know even as close in as Portland, that is not uncommon to go contract. You pay at the beginning of the month. And business-wise, that is clearly the most, I mean, that makes the most business sense.
Some friends of mine who are dealing with in the San Francisco area, even family daycare, it's contract. Almost always contract.
Yeah.
They sign up for that month, and even if they go on vacation or something, they have to pay.
Or if their child is sick, you pay for that, and then if you got to pay for sick care on top of that, you can begin to see that can pretty well blow somebody's budget, you know.
It does.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suspect maybe perhaps you've had that happen.
Oh, yeah. January and February is just a disaster. Yeah. Everybody's sick and you're paying for child care anyway. Oh dear. Okay. I said, you know, you didn't have a chance to introduce yourself since you came in late. Do you want to just tell people who you are, where you're from?
Yes, I'm from Auburn, California. I'm Doris Egerbrotten.
Uh huh.
And was just interested there. There's some discussion about starting a child care center in our church. And just beginning.
We talked about centers, child care centers yesterday, as compared to supporting child care providers in the community today. But you know, I have a bunch of resources, and you know, if you want to just talk a little bit about centers in addition to the family child care things that we're talking about today, I'm happy to do that. You know, at some other point. Mm-hmm. Okay. Why don't we talk a little bit about the problems that family child care providers face? Because I think that will give us a handle on looking at what kinds of things churches and synagogues can do in terms of supporting those providers and providing the highest quality care possible for the children in our communities. Suppose some of the things are. You may have to take the lead on this too.
What we were talking about, the economics, mm-hmm. being able to have a consistent number of kids that they can depend
on.
It's low pay. It's sort of uneven income.
Yeah.
It can be very uneven. Yeah, if you know, depends on.
And that's critically important. The whole reimbursement issue is an advocacy issue that churches need to get involved with. Okay, what besides? Okay.
I have a question on that. Is it necessary to have special liability insurance if you have child care in your home?
What about high cost?
I don't know.
Liability insurance is a problem.
for a big problem.
Because I know that's a big problem for the church.
Yeah. And actually, there are now, maybe Linda, you've talked to me specifically, but my understanding is that there is liability insurance available for child care providers. There are some national family child care organizations that are facilitating that, but it hasn't been easy. And in some cases, it still is necessary to do some advocacy work at a state level to ensure that liability insurance is available to family child care providers. And it's not just the liability insurance, it's all the other insurances that go with it, but the liability is the big one. But that's a very important point. And when we're talking about what churches can do, what congregations can do, there are a very variety of different models, and you have to think carefully about whether the congregation or the synagogue, the congregation wants to take on the liability, or whether they want to support the family child care providers and the provider herself take on the liability individually. Both models are being different models are being used in different churches across the country. So liability is a big one.
Okay. I think one thing that I see that any church could do or anybody can do is, and it's neat that you call this family daycare, because I'm not a babysitter. And so a lot of people, and the reason I'm in this, by the way, was not, that was the only thing I could do. The reasons for being in this were fairly multiple. But clearly, it's nice to have people call us family daycare providers and not just babysitters, that the work we do is very, very important. And that helps our self-esteem, and that is very important too. And those are things that you can do just in conversing with people or conversing with your own provider, is that it's isolating work and it's very stressful. So it's nice when people don't call me a babysitter.
Okay, so you just said a lot of things. You said low respect is an issue.
And a lot isolation of people assume, I think, that people are in it and that's the only thing we can do. And clearly it's not. My choice for being in it, it was very multiple. And recognizing low pay, but you also very must enjoy children, and you must get extreme satisfaction out of watching them and having a good sense of humor, that you have to be able to enjoy children and enjoy that stress and know when to kind of block it out and go, it's really not my problem, where's the humor in this? We must keep going. I cannot get bogged down in this. There will be end of the day, you know. But you really have to really love those kids.
They're like a parent.
Yeah, you are.
I say to myself regularly.
Yeah, you are a parent. And you have to work well with the children as well as the parents. That bonding has to occur on both ends. If it doesn't, you probably have
to. The statistics for people going out of child care, for providers going out of family child care, are actually higher than the statistic for people going out of center-based care, which I think
you said 41%.
41% for center-based. I think you're at around 60% for family child care providers. I mean, people go in and out of the business very, very fast for all these reasons. It just that people can't do it, can't make it, and yet, you know, a quarter of our children are in family child care, and a majority of our young children are in family child care.
And I think most people want this, especially for the very young, because of that bonding, the home atmosphere.
Yeah. This is a critical issue for us to address.
And this is what I started out with. Let's see, my children are now 3 and 4, and we've bonded so that why would I want to get rid of them? And I've bonded with their families. We're all one big group. And I know they'll all be back when we come back. I told them in January, we're coming for 3 weeks, and there wasn't really any balking. It was, well, you know, make it work. But the thing is that then, like you said, I had originally thought I would stay in an infant toddler program and move the children into, or, you know, say when they were 3 or 4, move them out. But you bond with them that now I can't take an infant because our day is so, we've moved into 3, 4-year-old kinds of things. Mm-hmm. There isn't the time to deal with an infant.
Yeah. Some other ones that are that can be a problem is just the a lack of expertise in some of the business skills.
That's very
you're running true. A small business.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some go out not really knowing what their baseline costs were and not being able to figure out that they were losing so badly that they needed to do something quickly or, you know.
One of the another problem can be startup costs. Mm-hmm. If you aren't a parent,
with young children yourselves and you don't have some of the equipment in your house, there can be enormous startup costs of doing that. For equipment and possibly for renovating, I mean, if you are going to be a licensed provider, which is a better way to go, you may need to do something to bring your apartment or your house up to standard so that you can get licensed.
Mm-hmm. And with that, if you have young children of your own, just the idea that you need to think through the idea of sharing your children's toys and their space, their bedroom or whatever play area that they have, and sharing mommy, because once you do this, then your kids, or for my children, and what happens with the toys that grandparents give them at Christmas and the daycare kids get into them? It's real hard to tell a three-year-old the difference between the two.
Are you doing this?
Well, I don't have a toddler. I wouldn't. I mean, I'm real upfront about that. I couldn't. And I'm real lucky because I live alone with my daughter and she's 13. And so the mess that's in the house when she comes home, she could care less.
She doesn't care.
And also she's able to be with them. She really loves a couple of the children. And so they're good for her because they love to see her come. So it fills her up and all this kind of stuff. But if I had a toddler of my own, it's very difficult.
One of the other issues, sort of a slightly different vein from those important issues, a slightly different one, is zoning. A lot of people find that they run into zoning problems. They cannot get a license because they're in a residential district which wouldn't allow a small business to exist. Mm-hmm. So we have to think about zoning, and again, something that churches can sometimes be supported in.
Are there any others?
Well, I think along with that lack of expertise and business skills, often there's more of a friendship kind of relationship between the caregiver and the parents of the children, and that sometimes if you don't set the guidelines really fairly firmly, they're more likely to take advantage of it on a friendship basis than they would if they had their child in a center.
Some don't clearly establish what kinds of things they will and won't do. And I've even at times have said yes too many times and should have said no, I can't. I just don't want to have your child for dinner tonight. I just need some time. But you know, they'll call up and you'll go, yeah, but that's okay, and you hang on to the phone. I mean, I have to tell you this too, because other providers, we laugh and we get together, but a mother will call in the morning and say, you know, my child can't come because they're sick or whatever, and on the phone you're going, oh, I'm sorry to hear this, but I'm going, yes. Okay. Didn't have today anyway, so this is great. It just opened up, you know, as now my day will be fine, thank you, Lord. And but you're telling the parent a whole different thing. Oh, the grandparents are coming to visit. Well, gosh, have a good time, and you know, your kid's face will be here, and as they're going out the door, you're going, oh. So yeah, some of that kind of, it's a little hard sometimes to stay, because you are a family, you're a part of their family, if you have children for any time in their life.
You also spoke to, again, the isolation. I mean, you start when providers have a chance to get together and talk, you can provide a kind of support group for each other, which is often lacking. I'd like to move from this and share with you from what is in draft form right now, but this is a manual which is being developed by my colleague for use in local congregations. And it is basically sort of from soup to nuts how a congregation might become involved in supporting family child care providers in the community, a rationale for why it's an important ministry to become involved with, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to look at particularly some of the ideas that have surfaced of what kinds of things congregations can do in partnership with family child care providers to enhance the quality that's being offered, because I think it speaks to what local congregations can be thinking about in terms of setting up a center or supporting family child care providers or a combination of the two. But there's lots and lots of possibilities. And this thing is in draft form now, but I think Marjorie plans to have it in final draft in the fall and then to publish it sometime next year. So it'll be available from our office, I assume, next year. Okay. One of the things that can be offered is hospitality, which is which speaks to the isolation problem. We're making a possible for family child care providers to come together, providing space where the providers could come with their children, the children could play in a space designed for them, and the providers could come together and talk about their mutual needs and concerns, et cetera, et cetera. Transportation. Sometimes providers may want to go on field trips with their children to parks, museums, special events, workshops, and a volunteer from the congregation could provide that service. You have to figure out your liability issues, but given that, it's a service that, you know, if you're a provider with five children in your home, you're fairly strapped in terms of what you can do. I mean, I've known family child care providers who just haul the kids on the subway, but, you know, not all of us have the wherewithal. A family child care provider's worst fear can be not being available because she herself is sick. Mm-hmm. So a church might put together a pool of substitutes, for example, who could be available to work in family child care homes to support the provider in that way. How about a toy, book, or equipment lending library? We talked about, you know, how the low uneven pay coupled with startup costs can make it very difficult to make this a viable business. Well, what if a congregation set up a toy, book, and equipment lending library so that you could have everything from high chairs to curriculum books to children's books to board games to outside equipment? and then you could rotate it, and you wouldn't have to have everything available, you wouldn't have to have own everything for each age group. But you could just borrow it, and children are growing all the time. Their needs are changing. Their developmental, what you need to have in order to meet their developmental needs are always changing. And this way, you wouldn't have to just own it all. You could share it among yourselves. Another idea is along that same line is collective buying. If a group of providers could get together, and you could facilitate a process where you could buy paint, paper, diapers, whatever else you might want to do that collectively instead of individually and save a lot of money.
And food.
Right, if you're, right.
And food.
Absolutely. Right. What I'm thinking is the other possibility is for a church to facilitate work having access to the child care food program through the federal government.
Well, right, and that's what we're on. But even where we live, we have to go into Portland to buy the case locks. So, you know, church is going to say, gee, we'll go and invite and help, you know, because, like you say, a case of graham crackers, but, you know, who can store that? But clearly a provider can go through, you know, any...
Right, right. And a church that doesn't necessarily have the space to house a center might well have the space to keep a surplus of the foods that the providers could then come and get on a
and the ability to purchase
at
a central location, and actually somebody does that because providers are at home during the day when businesses are open. So
that's right. So it's actually very tough to get to the stores.
And some of these wholesale places close at 5:30 and they're not open on weekends.
Very important. Yeah,
so
that's a good point.
Here we go again.
Mind Marjorie that I think she
and we
that
have that toy thing at our church. Actually, it's kind of through a community college thing, but they have purchased some very fine quality toys, very very nice wooden blocks, and some very nice name brand toys that are some that cost $100. Well, they're great for a couple of weeks, and then the kids are tired, so you move them on. I wouldn't be able to have them. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't, you know, I just wouldn't. And also, the kids would tire of it. So why would you spend $100 for one of these Fisher Price doors that opens and has all these buttons and all this stuff? But through the toy lending library, then it becomes
access to equipment through the church or synagogue. People are running small businesses, and they often require forms, schedules, records, correspondence, access to copiers, typewriters, duplicators, etc., etc. Could be a real support.
A copy machine.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things you could duplicate in terms of craft projects.
Churches and synagogues across the country are establishing revolving loan funds to address the need of your startup costs. If there was a loan fund available, the providers are going to be able to pay back that loan over a period of time where they might not have the money up front to do the necessary renovation or get the necessary equipment that they would require. With a loan fund, it might make it possible for them to become
child care providers. And it might only be a few hundred dollars.
Right.
It could be very small. It could be just enough to get going so that there could be a cash flow created. And it's hard, I'll tell you this too, and I haven't had to do this yet, but if I have to go to the bank and ask for a car loan based on my income and my job, I am nearly certain I will get turned down. So it's, you can't go out and say, I want some money from the lending institution generally. They won't take you based on just your job and your income.
Any of the things that we're talking about too are not necessarily things that one synagogue or one congregation needs to do together. I mean, congregations can work together and collectively or cooperatively sponsor a loan fund, for example, or sponsor a toy lending library, or through an ecumenical council of churches or through other kinds of ecumenical agencies, interfaith agencies. It can be done. Sometimes it doesn't feel possible for one congregation to do it, but with more working on it, it certainly becomes very possible. Another thing is to sponsor training or to make training possible, where we talked about the possibility of providers coming for 2 hours sometime where they could just get together and talk and provide, be a support group for each other, which is certainly critical. But what about, you could also spend those 2 or 3 hours to learn bookkeeping skills, to address child health, to address health needs. I mean, there are a lot of these people don't necessarily have the training in health and safety procedures that a family child care provider must have. But she also doesn't necessarily have access to that because how the time she's with the kids. And yet, in order for her to be a provider who really can provide quality care, she has to have access to that. A church could sponsor that fairly easily. A church can establish relationships with a community college or a training institution in the community and invite people to come in and provide that kind of expertise. And you could do it on a range of issues. You could do it on child development issues. You could do it on health and safety issues. You can do it on business skills. You could do it on, you could ask your providers what they need and bring in whoever would be appropriate for providing it.
Is there a place that has a record of all the family child care in your area? Like, how would a church start, how would a church find these people to let them know we're going to sponsor this at our?
Well, sometimes they do, and sometimes there's a fairly extensive network of child care resource and referral agencies now, is what they're called. Mm-hmm. It's a national network, and what these organizations are, they, is exactly what you're talking about. I mean, they're basically set up mm-hmm. to help parents find child care. Mm-hmm. But in the process of doing so, they identify all the child care providers in the community. Mm-hmm. And often, actually, these organizations go beyond that to become advocates for family child care providers and child care mm-hmm. centers in their community. Some of the best advocacy work in the country on child care issues is being done by these child care resource and referral agencies. Mm-hmm. But you have the problem that a lot of family child care providers are not licensed. Mm-hmm. They operate underground. They're off the books. And are, as such, because they're out of the loop, don't have access to some of the programs which will enhance the quality and really support them as child care providers. So it becomes tricky. My former boss, before she came to the National Council of Churches, actually ran a resource and referral agency in Ithaca, New York. Mm-hmm. And she had a list of all the unlicensed family child care providers in the community, as well as all the licensed. And periodically, the authorities would come and ask her for her list. Mm-hmm. And she had to say, no, you know, I will not give it to you, and risk being shut down or whatever else, because revealing these names was something that she just didn't feel she could do. Mm-hmm. So you have to, I mean, it's, so sometimes you can turn to a child care resource and referral mm-hmm. agencies. Sometimes, if that's not available, a church or synagogue could start their own. That would be a service mm-hmm. in itself, to begin to be able to identify the providers in the community, not only to support them, but also to be able to refer families who need care to people who are the best match for their children mm-hmm. and for their needs.
In our state, you know, you could go, because I'm licensed so and registered, so Children's Services has me, and I know, mm-hmm. you know the number. I'm also USDA, and you can go through the Child Care Providers Food Program,
And so that is a good place mm-hmm. to start. And then, you know, if you get a little core group by advertising, you may be able to bring in, mm-hmm. which bring in some of the people that are marginal that refuse not to. But that's a good place to start mm-hmm. because there's a whole lot of things that people can do. And you've mentioned so many that are so good for providers because you are so isolated and people forget. But every day, just for me to get to dental appointments means hauling a couple of them. It's a major, you know, collision of events that has to happen right on schedule, or else we don't go to the dental appointment that's been 6 months in the works. So there's all kinds of things that communities can do, or churches at any level, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. without running a big center themselves. Because I sometimes think churches think, well, the only thing we can do is take this nursery and kindergarten that we have here that sits here 6 days a week and fill it full of kids. Right. And that clearly can happen, but sometimes that seems a bit overwhelming.
Right. I mean, that can be a valid ministry, but people simply are not aware of family child care. It isn't as visible a service or an issue.
Yeah.
And one of the other services that congregations can provide is simply to give visibility to family child care as a service. Because I think that, you know, as we're talking, any of these services that a congregation would become involved in supporting would be a vehicle for education.
Absolutely.
Within their own congregation and within the neighborhood.
And of course, then it would. Because most of the people in your congregation, either they or their grandparents, I mean, they are grandparents, their grandchildren, somebody they know is getting child care. And they maybe just aren't sure what to do with this problem. Because if you've got a congregation of people that are 50 plus, this was not an issue that they ever faced. Mm-hmm. And they don't know how to face it.
Sometimes what you'll find in a community is that there isn't enough child care. I mean, we're seeing how there's more mothers entering the workforce, and there's an abundance of young children out there who need care. So actually, in stimulating the supply of child care can be a service that congregations could provide by supporting, by going out and talking to people who are thinking about the possibility of going into family child care as a business, and then support it, and then providing the supports that they would need to become quality child care providers. This would be another service that they could do. Now, there's two different models of family child care satellite systems that are set up. The idea being that the church is kind of the hub of a satellite system of family child care homes. And it's done in two ways. Either, and this speaks to your issue about liability insurance, either the family child care home is basically an independent business, and they get their own liability insurance, and they handle all their own books, accept all the payments themselves, do all that kind of work. Or the church can actually take responsibility for hiring family child care providers, for paying them as staff of the church, for covering their liability costs, and basically run a family child care system where the centerpiece of it is at the church and administered by the church or synagogue. Now, I think that model is being used less than the more diffuse model of simply supporting family child care providers who are a loose network. But both models are out there. There's expertise for both of them. Let's see.
This may be a little bit off center, but I mean, I work with different companies and stuff, and they mm-hmm. invariably involve. The question comes up: how can this company support childcare? And they always think first that we have to set up a childcare center. And now I'm seeing an option that's obviously what.
I'm really glad you raised this because it's very important, and I forget it.
You know, it's really amazing to me how often the issue bounces off organizations who really want to do something about it,
mm-hmm,
but the idea of setting up all the complexities of setting up a child care center, which is not the business that they're in,
mm-hmm.
since businesses are generally conservative and they only want to do what they know how to do, which is probably a good idea, given what you said
mm-hmm.
earlier. Using this kind of a support system, I guess the question would be, when a business would want to set up something like this, and I imagine a church or synagogue would be in the same place, they'd want to have some kind of, they want to get something in return. Mostly, access to slots would be the main thing. A church may have more altruistic reasons, but to a certain extent, a church is going to probably support it because they also want to be able
sure.
to have slots for their members.
Right.
As a service to members. How, what kind of quid pro quo is generally used in that kind of situation in terms of amount of investment or support provided?
It runs the gamut.
Okay.
You know,
so
There's no norm. I mean, as you know, I mean, businesses do everything from sort of offering a cafeteria plan of benefits to their workers to actually having full on-site childcare programs. And in a similar, so I think that probably in terms of family childcare, the same would be true. I mean, there's no reason why a business couldn't do some of the same
things,
use
right.
some of these same ideas that a congregation
right.
could.
Right.
By the same token, I think that, you know, it's talking about partnerships within a community makes all sense in the world. I mean, we've talked about churches working together to support family and child care providers. There's no reason why a church
and a business
couldn't team up
yeah.
to provide that kind of support. And, you know, it might be that the business could offer more of the logistical support
right.
and the business side of the support,
yes.
whereas the church could offer more, you know, they have a child care center, so they could, you know, they could offer the time, when the place for providers to come with their children or whatever else, but there's no reason why a partnership like that couldn't
right.
be worked out.
Right.
And I think, you know, how much do you invest? Well, you know, I think that the business also gets out of it good PR,
mm-hmm.
you know? And if they want a stable workforce, people are gonna go and work for them who know that they have good childcare policies.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that when they get strapped, you know, if their child is sick for 2 weeks, then they're going to meet with more sympathy. Or if they have, you know, if they have some other kind of a childcare crisis, that there's going to be more support for them from within their job, which pays off for the business because then they get more productive workers.
Right.
If you have people who know that their children are in quality care, then they don't spend 60% of their time worrying about whether their child
right.
is safe. So I think, you know, it's a good investment for businesses, although a lot of businesses don't yet appreciate
yeah, yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But
there's a place called the Work Family Institute in New York, which is doing nothing except work on childcare issues in businesses, and they're really wonderful at what they do.
And from my point of view, the business community wouldn't have to do much. Anything would be better than nothing. And from my point of view, where we live, they're doing nothing, but the business community could do so much to support
mm-hmm.
and provide a network for their employees. These are providers in the communities. These are the kinds of ages, children, da da da, that they do or don't do, which would be invaluable for a lot of employees to say, I don't even know where these providers are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Or this provider lives in your neighborhood or lives on your way to work or has a child the same as yours or, you know, really does well with
them. The person calls into the personnel department
yeah.
saying, I can't come to work today. Is there somebody there who can say, you know, because my child's sick, have you considered X, Y, or Z?
Yeah, exactly. It's, and, you know, they want to do stuff. I know corporations because they've come to us in our local area.
It might be possible for a business to contract not only with a church for that kind of service, but with a child care resource and referral agency.
Right.
Yeah.
It would not be unrealistic to say, you know, we have 600 employees and I would like each of those employees to have access to your service. How much would you charge for a year for that contract?
Okay. I mean, they could even buy a specific slot, whether it's
right.
filled up every day or not. But a lot of churches look at a big thing, and I think there's a lot of times that's real appropriate. But sometimes if you're just getting in, you can start out by learning about it, by working with the existing structure, you know, the family daycare providers, and there's just so much you can do.
I think that we've talked a lot about supporting family child care providers in our communities. The issues, however, are national. They go across communities, across states, across regions. And that in addition to addressing the needs of individual providers in our communities, we also need to address some of the legislative and public policy issues. And I think that we need to strategize with our congregations, not only how we can work within our own communities, but how we can support the child care needs of our own communities by working for national and state public policy change, which will put more money into the system, have more support for quality care in a variety of different ways, including registration and licensing and all the other supports. It seems like we've given short shrift to it again, but the advocacy piece is so, so, so important. And I'd like to just close, because I realize we're right up against lunch, that when this resource becomes available, it has within it an appendix which includes the names of family childcare organizations, child advocacy organizations, family childcare newsletters, family childcare networks, USDA family childcare information about the USDA food program, and then a host of publications specifically on family childcare and family childcare businesses, family childcare regulation, et cetera, et cetera. So that there, it'll be a very useful resource, I think, not only to a congregation who's involved in both working with direct service and advocacy, but also for family childcare providers.
Yeah.
And how do we get?
You can get this from my office, which is the Child and Family Justice Office at the National Council of Churches, which is 475 Riverside Drive, New York, New York, 10025. Okay? And put it my attention, Karen Collins.
What's it called again?
Becoming a Partner in Family Child Care, a Handbook for Congregations.
The more people that are aware of family daycare.
There's an enormous amount of work that the Methodist Church, the Presbyterian Church, the Jewish faith, and the Lutherans need to do around family childcare.
Well,
I don't know what denomination you are.
Lutheran.
Okay, we went around before because of the kind of invisibility of childcare.
Yeah.
Family
childcare.
There's
a lot the business community can do.
It isn't big. It isn't big dollars or big appropriations of time.
It's pretty small potatoes. I mean, an access for me to a copier free of charge. You know, for minimal copy, I mean, 50 copies a month would just be wonderful.
The quality assurance thing is the thing that a business would be concerned about, because they don't want to be associated with something that has a big newspaper, you know, problem.
Oh.
And that's the question. I mean, what role can a business play in ensuring quality of the people that they're in that satellite? That would be the thing that a business, that would be the bottom line. So to the extent that as you are developing this stuff, you can be thinking about what are some methods that...
But I think well, in the church, we do the same thing. We're often being asked to refer. People say, do you know if somebody can provide child care? We get those calls all the time. And
but
we know some people, but we don't know if they're good operations or
and
not.
Yet, and yet, the more of this kind of thing that you do in terms of providing support services, the more confidence you will have that those people are quality providers.
Right.
If
but
you are
even a church is less vulnerable to bad publicity in that respect, though, than the business is.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of that, that's what I'm saying. They're going to be, that's the thing that they're going to be focusing on. And I put this.
But that's great.
Back.
I mean, in one sense, that's a real opportunity because they will bring to it some of the hard questions that need to be asked in terms of really ensuring quality.
Thanks, Karen.
Yeah, thanks for having. I need to get.